Every 3 seconds, someone receives blood from a complete stranger. Think about that for a moment. Right now, as you read this sentence, someone's life is being saved by a fluid that contains iron atoms forged in dying stars and carries the salt of ancient seas. We casually donate 13% of our supply, confident our bodies will regenerate it completely, yet we cannot manufacture a single drop in any laboratory. Blood is simultaneously ordinary and miraculous, a substance more valuable than oil that connects every human being in ways both literal and profound. This crimson river flowing through our veins holds stories of scientific breakthroughs, cultural taboos, corporate greed, and extraordinary human courage, stories that reveal as much about society as they do about biology. Blood donation centers avoid words like bleed, preferring donate or give the gift of life. Yet behind this altruistic vocabulary lies a sprawling global industry. At Filton, Europe's largest blood processing facility, 1,000 gallons of blood rotate daily on an overhead filtration device. Each donation transforms into multiple products with precise price tags: standard red cells at $124.46, plasma at $28.75, specialized components reaching $1,113.45. The World Health Organization recommends that 1/3% of any population donate blood voluntarily. Yet of 172 countries surveyed, 80 reported only 1% participation, dangerously insufficient. 71 countries still rely on family replacement systems or paid sellers. American regulations forbid cash, but allow pizza, haircuts, and gym memberships as incentives. Stockholm's blood bank sends donors a text when their blood is used, a simple gesture costing just 3 pence that generates overwhelmingly positive responses. Until 1972, U.S. blood banks labeled blood by race, with some hospitals refusing to transfuse Negro blood into white patients. Today, targeted appeals for black blood serve medical necessity. Black donors are more likely to carry the Ro subtype, crucial for treating sickle cell anemia patients. Despite sophisticated medical systems, we remain utterly dependent on human generosity. 6 seconds, perhaps 10. After that, the jaws activate, hundreds of teeth engage, and the leech begins its meal. These creatures possess 32 brains, 10 stomachs, 9 pairs of testicles, and hundreds of teeth that leave a distinctive Mercedes-Benz-shaped bite mark. Their saliva contains the most powerful natural anticoagulants known, keeping blood flowing for up to 10 hours. In 1985, 3-year-old Guy Condelli had his ear bitten off by the family dog. After microsurgery reattached it, the ear turned dangerously blue. Blood flowed in but couldn't drain through damaged veins. Surgeon Joseph Upton applied European medicinal leeches flown across the Atlantic. The ear perked right up. Today, leeches are standard practice for salvaging compromised tissue in flap surgeries, replanted digits, and even penises. At BioPharm in Wales, Britain's only leech production business, these creatures are bred with scientific precision. Both major species are now endangered, requiring special permits for export. Nurses call them creepy crawlies, yet patients never refuse leech therapy. It's the last resort for saving reconstructed tissue. After earthquakes, terrorist attacks, and in war zones, leeches become critical medical tools at just $10 per leech. Janet Vaughn, once deemed too stupid to be educated, failed her entrance exams twice before earning a first-class degree in medical sciences. As war approached in the late 1930s, she foresaw massive casualties and received $100 to explore blood storage, purchasing rubber tubing, corks, and clicks to make crude transfusion sets. Meanwhile, Percy Oliver established the voluntary blood donation system that continues today. In 1921, he organized 22 volunteers, creating a system where donors gave freely rather than for payment, a conviction he shared with Geoffrey Langdon Keynes that unpaid blood attracted better donors. Without widespread telephones, they contacted donors by telegraph, constable, taxi driver, and bicycle. During World War II, mobile teams set up temporary bleeding centers in town halls, factory break rooms, and village pubs. By war's end, the Army Blood Transfusion Service grew from collecting 100 pints daily to 1,300, establishing principles that continue to guide blood donation systems worldwide. The HIV virus targets CD4-positive T cells, white blood cells coordinating immune responses like air traffic controllers. The 1980s AIDS crisis triggered profound fear, exemplified by the UK's 1986 Tombstone advertisement. This scaremongering was necessary when HIV meant certain death. For hemophiliacs lacking clotting proteins, plasma-derived factor VIII revolutionized treatment in the late 1970s, but this miracle required plasma from thousands of pooled donors. By 1983, insiders knew 4 infected persons could contaminate the entire world supply. In the UK, 4,689 hemophiliacs contracted HIV and hepatitis C from contaminated products. 2,883 have died. At Trelawar College, a boarding school for disabled children, 15-year-old Audie Goodyear and classmates learned their HIV status casually. You haven't, you have, you haven't, you haven't. Of 5 boys present, only Goodyear survived. Of 89 hemophiliac boys at Trelawar, 72 are dead. Medical records mysteriously vanished, common among tainted blood victims. MP Andy Burnham called it a criminal cover-up on an industrial scale. In remote Jammu village, western Nepal, 16-year-old Radha sleeps in a rough shed during her period, practicing chaupati, the system of isolating menstruating women. Her sister throws food onto her plate the way you would feed a dog. Women publicly defend the practice as preventing disasters, but privately confess their hatred. Surprisingly, women themselves, grandmothers, mothers-in-law, are the primary enforcers. Throughout history, menstrual blood has been viewed as a noxious effluvium with supernatural powers. Pliny the Elder claimed menstruating women could wither plants and blunt steel. Religious texts from the Old Testament to Buddhist practices prescribed separation rituals. In India, over 70% of surveyed women knew nothing about periods before menarche. Arunachalam Muruganantham, menstrual man, revolutionized sanitary pad production after discovering his wife using nasty cloths because commercial pads were unaffordable. His simple, low-cost machine now operates in 25 countries, producing 8 pads for 40 rupees, 60 cents, versus 140 rupees, $2.13, commercially. Recent years show remarkable shifts. Athletes like Chinese swimmer Fu Yuanhui openly discussed period-related performance issues. Venture capitalists funded women-run period businesses. For girls who previously missed school, each pad offers dignity and opportunity. Throughout history, humans have consumed blood seeking its power. Romans drank dying gladiators' blood to cure epilepsy. In 1926, Alexander Bogdanov established Moscow's first blood transfusion institute, exchanging blood with younger students. He claimed transfusions halted balding and improved eyesight, but died after 11 exchanges when his immune system reacted fatally to incompatible blood. Modern rejuvenation attempts include companies charging $8,000 for plasma from young donors. Harvard researchers found older mice receiving young blood showed younger acting stem cells and improved healing. Despite billions in research, viable blood substitutes remain elusive. Free hemoglobin scavenges nitric oxide, causing dangerous vessel constriction. Blood remains partly mysterious, carrying oxygen, fighting infections, and inspiring fears and hopes throughout history. We've progressed from leech therapy to HIV treatments, voluntary donation to life-saving transfusions. When you donate blood, you extend a lifeline to someone you'll never meet, participating in ancient human solidarity. This crimson river carries our shared humanity and extraordinary capacity for compassion.